This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Messianic fervor is exploding all over the world. Worldwide, not just in Israel, not just in America, but worldwide. Yet the details remain shrouded in mystery. Jews are awaiting the Mashiach. Muslims await the Mahdi. Christians await Messiah's second coming. Many await a messianic age. What's it all about? Mysteries seem to be out there. The shroud that has veiled the messianic mystery for mankind's entire sojourn on planet Earth is soon going to be drawn back in an apocalyptic unveiling. A revelation of reality that has escaped our understanding, a sweeping away of persistently frustrating blindness. We're going to attempt to do that here today on Viewpoint, but one of the things that's so interesting about the coming of Messiah is that before he comes, a counterfeit will be presented. And he won't be presented as a counterfeit. He'll be presented as the real McCoy, the real thing. And so we take a look at unveiling this mystery today. In fact, we're going to take a look by looking at Daniel's unveiling drama. Daniel's unveiling drama. And indeed, Daniel, no description of the imposter, the Antichrist, the counterfeit Christ is more detailed nor more dramatic than what is revealed to and through the prophet Daniel's disturbing visions of our future. But why Daniel? Did he have some special favor with God, such that God could entrust to him the most profound revelation of the son of perdition, who through a majestic beast empire would rule the world as a counterfeit Messiah, a consummate betrayer of the Messiah himself? The answer to that question is a resounding yes, but why? We'll explore that in just a few moments, and I'm glad that you've joined us. This conversation is always with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. I trust that today also will have a transforming aspect to it, because as we begin to realize the nature of the counterfeit that is to come, it also should reveal to each one of us that there are going to be decisions that have to be made. We're all going to have to make decisions. We're going to have to also have discernment. So we're going to have to make decisions, but the decisions are going to be made on whether or not we have discernment of who the true Messiah would be and what his counterfeit would look like. And then, of course, having made the decision and the discernment, then we have to conduct ourselves accordingly with discipline, godly discipline, because the test is going to be so great that even Jesus himself said, if it were possible, even the very remnant, small remnant elect would be deceived. You don't want to be deceived. I don't want to be deceived. We don't want to be taken advantage of by a counterfeit Messiah. And so today, we take a look at Daniel's drama. And again, you're listening to Viewpoint. Viewpoint does determine destiny, friends. Our viewpoint does, now, and always has and will determine destiny in some way. So let's take a look at this fellow Daniel, from God's viewpoint, that is. He was very unique among the sons of men. Well, we're all unique before God. We have a special purpose and calling. But Daniel was a man that was set apart from others in mind and in heart by God. He was a man that apparently God was convinced could be trusted with one of the greatest, most solemn and serious revelations that would have profound impact on every single one of us, on all humanity, particularly now as we're in this era of prophetic history leading to the end of the age and the coming of Messiah. Now, even though God is no respecter of persons, we know that he is not a respecter of persons in a broad sense, because we all have, as true followers of Christ, we all have access to the Father by his Spirit through forgiveness of sins and walking in righteousness. But There are those that God has identified throughout history who enjoyed unusual favor, probably because of their greater sacrificial devotion to his kingdom, to their greater willingness to surrender to his word, the will of the Father, to hear his voice and obey despite the cost. So we find this young fellow, Daniel, a Hebrew young man having been taken captive to pagan Babylon, a godless and sinful culture. But in spite of that, he remained wisely true to his deeply rooted convictions. In fact, his applied faith was amazing. Well, deeply righteous, I guess, in his own ways, he purposed to identify himself with the devastating sin of his own nation, Judah, that was bringing the Father's judgment upon them, and that's why they've been cast away to Babylon. And so he prayed what perhaps is the greatest identificational prayer of the Bible, which can be found in Daniel 9. Listen to what he has to say. He said, "We have sinned and have committed iniquity and have done wickedly and have rebelled, even by departing from thy precepts and from thy judgments. Neither have we hearkened unto thy servants, the prophets. O Lord, to us belongeth confusion of face, to our kings, to our princes, to our fathers, because we have sinned against thee." Sounds an awful lot like a prayer that should have been made every year on the National Day of Prayer, right? Which we have just experienced, May 1st. Daniel goes on to say, "Neither have we obeyed the voice of the Lord our God to walk in his laws. Yes, all Israel has transgressed your law, even by departing, that they may not obey your voice. Therefore, the curse is poured out upon us. As it is written, all this evil has come upon us. Yet we made not our prayer before the Lord our God, that we might turn from our iniquities and understand your truth." What an amazing prayer. He identified with his people. But if we look at Daniel from God's viewpoint, if Daniel was identifying with his people in their sin, why then did God send the angel Gabriel to him saying, "I am now come forth to give you skill and understanding concerning the earlier vision, for you are greatly beloved, therefore understand the matter and consider the nation"? Let me ask you a question. If the angel Gabriel were to come to you, do you think he would testify, "You are greatly beloved of the Father"? Now, I don't know about you, but I would love to have that testimony. Yes, I'd also love to have the testimony, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." But apparently that is exactly what God thought of Daniel, even though he was a young man at this time. You're greatly beloved. So Daniel was greatly beloved by God. And if we really realized in our own lives, as we delve more deeply into the devious deceptions of destruction coming upon the people of this earth, it might change ourselves. It might just open our eyes to have discernment to what's about to take place, because God wanted us to know. And he spoke through Daniel to let us know. Would you like to know what he had to say? Daniel's unveiling drama? We'll pull back the curtain in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're taking a look at Daniel's unveiling drama there from the book of Daniel, looking at this counterfeit Christ figure, the imposter that will be presented to the world before the coming, the second coming of the true Messiah. Now, in order to understand the background of this, we're trying to lay out a little bit about Daniel and who he was and why God would have delivered to him such amazing warnings and truth concerning the times that you and I are now in. So God warned Israel by the mouth of the prophet Ezekiel what was required of them to recover favor with the Father. Three times God declared Daniel to be one of the three most righteous men in history. Yet he made this warning, though Daniel and Noah and Job were in it, as I live, says the Lord, they shall not deliver neither son nor daughter. They shall but deliver their own souls by their righteousness. So God recognized that Noah and Daniel and Job were three of the most righteous men ever in world history. That's God's viewpoint. His favor was born of a profound faith that these men had, revealed in righteous obedience to the word and the will and the ways of God. And that's really how we receive grace to both endure and find victory amid the vast betrayal that's ahead. And that's why we need to understand this fella, Daniel, and we need to understand the disclosure of the dilemma that he was facing. So imagine for a moment, having been given by God a detailed glimpse into the world's future up to the very time of history's final hour, yet being frustrated by the failure to have the exact timing and full implications disclosed. That's what happened to Daniel. In fact, his final words, revealing that he was left without full comprehension of the shocking visions that were committed to his trust by God. He said, I heard but understood not. Then I said, oh, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And God responded to him, not with further revelation, but by declaring there would be no further disclosure, either for Daniel's understanding or for him to deliver to those who would read his written words a prophetic warning. Here's what God said. Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the end of the age. But go thy will till the end be, for you shall rest and stand in your lot at the end of the days. Well, the reality is that you and I are going to stand in our lot at the end of the days too, just like Daniel. It's coming, and it's coming quickly. In fact, Jesus said at the end of the book of Revelation, he said, behold, I come quickly. Now, quickly from God's viewpoint is different than quickly from our viewpoint. Remember, quickly can mean 1,000 years. Quickly could mean 2,000 years because 1,000 years with the Lord is as one day. So what we really are facing right now, looking at it from God's viewpoint, is we are less than one day away, less than 2 days, rather, away from the second coming of Jesus Christ, but almost 2 days away. You say, well, when would that day have begun, or those days have begun? Well, they would have begun on the day of Pentecost. Or perhaps we could say they would begun at the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. Well, when was that? That was about 30 A.D. 30 A.D., because Jesus was born somewhere around 4 B.C. So around 30 A.D., Jesus was crucified and rose again. Count 2 days or 2,000 years from there, and where does that lead you? You don't have to be a mathematician to figure it out. Even a grade schooler can figure it out. It would lead you to the year 2030, wouldn't it? How far away from today is 2030? Less than 5 years. So suppose that 2030 would be the earliest time that the vision of Daniel could be fulfilled. That wouldn't be very far away, would it? So my question for you, and God's question for you by his Spirit would be, are you ready? Would you even recognize the counterfeit Messiah? Would you recognize Jesus? Jesus came unto his own, and his own received him not. They didn't recognize him. The Sanhedrin, the 71 elders of Israel, is supposed to be the revered religious leaders knowing the Torah From beginning to end, they didn't recognize Jesus. In fact, they crucified him. Didn't they? So they even accepted Barabbas instead of Jesus, a murderer and a thief and a robber. And they also testified that we have no king but Caesar. So they were willing to accept Caesar, whom they hated, Rome and its rulership, whom they hated, over Jesus, HaMashiach, the Holy One of Israel. They were willing to accept a Roman Caesar that incorporated both rulership over the civil world and over the spiritual world, being titled Pontifex Maximus. They were willing to accept him rather than Jesus. Does that not tell you something about how quickly and easily it's going to be for the masses, yes, even so-called religious and spiritual people, spiritually oriented people, to accept a counterfeit Messiah? Yeah, we should understand that. So God told Daniel that the prophetic words were closed up and sealed till the end of the time. So what are we to glean from what was given? How are we to understand why did God give something to Daniel that was sealed up to the end of time? Are we at the end of time now? Is God now revealing to us what we need to understand about this drama of destiny, Daniel's unveiling drama? Well, first of all, it demands our decision, as we've talked about. It's going to demand that we make a decision. We're going to have to understand, we're going to have to discern, and then we're going to have discipline to maintain what we discern, understanding the difference between a counterfeit, an imposter, and the real Messiah. And to help us understand that, I have written two books that will help us in that regard. The first is Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. That's given exclusively for that purpose. Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. It's a $22 book. Here's for $20 on our website. The other is called Messiah, Unveiling the Mystery of the Ages. And I guarantee you've not read anything like it before. It will open your eyes to things that are competing and that will be amalgamated together to form what is presented as the real, but is actually the imposter, Messiah. That book is a $22 book, and it's yours for $18 on our website, saveus.org. Now, if you get both of those books, which are not duplicative, by the way, they're complimentary. If you get both of those books together, it'll be $6 for one, postage and handling, and $2 for the other. Total of $8 postage and handling. Again, Antichrist and Messiah. Messiah unveiling the mystery of the ages. All right. Now, we move on to look at this unveiling drama. Now, don't make a mistake. Satan's goal is to take dominion over the entire earth, including you. That's his goal. That has been his declared intention from the beginning of time when he rebelled in the heavenlies. And his final move is going to be to become king of the mountain of God, that is the Temple Mount. We've talked about that. My book, King of the Mountain, if you don't have it, you ought to get it. And it'll open your eyes. It's a $20 book, yours for $15 on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. And it reveals how Satan, through his imposter, will seek to become the ruler not only of the Temple Mount, but of the Temple Mount of your heart, which is supposed to be the temple of the Holy Spirit. So this prophesied dominion drama began in the Garden of Eden with Adam forfeiting earth's dominion to the deceiver, that is Satan, by equivocating through human reason, just like we do, with God's simple command by means of Satan's fleshly seduction. So what did the deceiver do? In his desperate attempt to seize final world power as a pseudo-religious authority, he tested Adam and Eve by a question of three words: hath God said? Now, the question I want to ask you before we go further here is, have you been tested with those three words? I can guarantee you have. Every person, every professing Christian has been tested at least once, if not more, multiple times by those words, hath God said? And how we answer that question may very well determine whether we'll be able to identify the imposter Messiah before Christ comes. If we say yes, and I'm going to conduct my life accordingly, we pass the test of discernment. If we say yes, but we're in deep trouble. And most Christians answer yes, but. Even their pastors answer yes, but. When Jesus has spoken, when God has spoken, our answer should always be yes, Lord. In full agreement with what he says, no matter what the culture says, no matter what our feelings say, no matter what the situation or circumstances seem to be, we will answer yes, Lord, and bring ourselves into full agreement and conduct ourselves accordingly. Anything else is a failure of the test of trust and obedience. Remember, trust and obey. Yeah, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. When we walk with the Lord in the light of his word, what a glory he will shed on our way. When we do his good will, he will abide for us still and with all who will trust and obey. That's the issue. It's simple. Not complex. Very, very simple. And Daniel understood that. He was one of the three most righteous men that God identified in all of Israel's history, or all of human history. So here's what happened. There was a great beast that Daniel envisioned in a dream, a vision. It was described as diverse or different from all others, exceeding dreadful. Now, in this age in which the word diversity is spread around as if it's the salvation message for humankind, we've got to be very careful about this word diversity. We're not going to go into a lot of details about that. But this great beast was diverse or different, radically different, from the other three that preceded it. First was Babylon, the head of gold. And then was the Greek Empire, Alexander the Great. Followed by the Babylonian Empire, and then the Medo-Persian Empire that took over from Babylon. Then there was Alexander the Great, and then finally the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was in existence at the time of Jesus' birth and will be in existence and rule the world in a one-world government just at the time Jesus returns. Consider that. So this great beast, diverse and different from all others, God said was exceedingly dreadful. In fact, that was Daniel's observation. You can find it in Daniel chapter 7. This beast, the final great world power manifested in the vision, is most commonly identified as Rome. Further described as dreadful and terrible, devouring and breaking in pieces, and again, diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and had 10 horns. So it's then out of this unprecedented diversity that the little horn, or counterfeit Messiah, begins to come forth to rule as Satan's ultimate emissary over the whole planet. Out of diversity? That's right. We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries
on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Think about the word diversity. Remember this great power, Rome, was to be diverse, different than all others that preceded it. Very different, unprecedented diversity. So what was that about? Well, right now, never in history has the word diversity or diverse had greater prominence or popularity, right? So in truth, the word diversity has become the central pillar of political correctness, multiculturalism, and religious pluralism. And that's where we live. It's a new cultural, shall we say, moniker purporting to describe the ideal and ultimate social situation for global unity and peace. It's perceived as the roadmap for utopian government that disregards the biblically described sinful human nature that defies unity and diversity, and renders the final historical representation of Rome so dreadful and terrible and devouring. Now, how does that work? I want you to think about this. The final expression of man's best effort to rule or govern, not by a single individual, whether king or self-exalted revolutionary dictator, but by the people in their diversity, is commonly known as democracy, not damocracy, democracy, the rule of the people. But the very nature of unfettered democracy is the profound danger that so-called diversity of people, when battered together without restraint, will manifest in a horrific dictatorship, destroying all others that are not aligned with the purported majority. So dangerous was this kind of democracy deemed to be by America's founding fathers that it was feared and warned to be potentially the most dangerous of all forms of government. Did you know that? So at the Constitutional Convention, and here we are in the process of celebrating our 250th anniversary as a political entity called the United States of America, Benjamin Franklin was asked, you might recall, by a woman as they left the convention, what kind of a government have you given us? And he replied, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. So a republic is a democratic form of government, but protected insofar as possible from majority and godless tyranny by a whole bunch of checks and balances that would maximize the security of life, liberty, and happiness. Now, unfortunately, what's happened in this country that is established as a major representative of the resurrected Roman Empire with a Roman capital, Roman numerals, and a Romance language, all of the Western nations with their Romance languages, all Roman. So Rome was a republic. But it shed its protections in favor of a man who was exalted democratically to the status of emperor, who then ultimately clothed himself in deity, assuming a public worship as the Pontifex Maximus. The complete merger of civil government and religious authority, and that's about to happen again at the conclave that is coming up next week. Please listen very carefully, because the Pope is called the Pontifex Maximus. He took over in about 450 AD took over the very title that was given to the ancient Roman emperors and bestowed upon the Bishop of Rome. Notice Rome, it's still Rome. All roads lead to Rome. When you read Revelation chapter 17, you will find that, the city on seven hills. It's very clear. And then comes a little horn, being diverse from the 10 powers that delegated the authority to him for world redemption. And when this imposter's power is secured, he begins to reveal his identity through his methods. The Bible says, Daniel says, he shall speak great words against the Most High, that is against God, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. It's going to happen progressively, established by the authority of democratic diversity without God. Please understand this. It will be a bitter betrayal of what people think is going to happen. So, again, we're talking about Daniel's unveiling drama. We're pulling back the curtain now to see what God revealed through the prophet Daniel that we are to see in our generation. This imposter is not going to gain dominion authority in the earth by his own power. You can find that in Daniel chapter 8, verse 24. His ultimate dictatorial power is going to be the end result of progressive democracy that empowers 10 regional powers, which will divest themselves of their power and delegate their power and authority in a desperate expectation to a charismatic counterfeit Messiah who they believe is going to bring peace on earth and temporal salvation. It's Satan who is going to facilitate this delegation, which will determine planetary destiny. Daniel lays it all out. This delegation of power is demonic. First, it's the 10 horns that gain their power by demonically informed democracy, pure democracy, not republic, and then we'll delegate that again to Satan's chosen one, that wicked, who is coming after the work of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, as the Apostle Paul wrote about. Daniel also says his actions are going to be very devious and deceitful. He's going to work deceitfully, it says in Daniel chapter 11. He will gain power and dominion through pretense and false promises, coming as what appears to be the purveyor of peace. He's going to enter into the world's most infamous league or covenant or treaty, whatever it is, with the intent to ultimately break it as soon as his intended purpose is achieved. And then it will give him unprecedented dominion over the glorious land, that's Israel, the land of Israel, Eretz Israel, that was deeded as an eternal leasehold by God to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then, having secured the land, he will divide the land for gain. That's his final act of demonic dominion. Then, he will fulfill Satan's declared goal of establishing his own worship on the Temple Mount, declaring himself God. In fact, as Daniel says, he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas of the glorious holy mountain and shall exalt himself above every god and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sits in the very temple of God, showing himself that he is God, which means there's going to be a third temple. And it very well is going to come very, very soon. So this whole attractive and compelling incarnation, so to speak, of Satan's rebellious heart reduces the planet and its people, that's all of us, and its government and religious authorities with all deceivableness of unrighteousness, because they received not the love of the truth, as Paul wrote in 2 Thessalonians. So there's going to be massive destruction as the son of perdition, the Antichrist, comes and becomes manifested for who he really is. He will not be understood for who he is really is at first. It's going to take 2 or 3 years until ultimately these things become fulfilled. Now, there are things about what Daniel says about him, that he will depart from the God of his fathers. Well, who is the God of his fathers? Well, we're not told. It could be that he's a Jew. It could be that he's a Gentile Christian, or perhaps both, thus placing himself by heritage within the ambit of both Jesus Christ and his followers. Some now even suggest he might be Muslim. But I think it would be very difficult for any Jew or Christian to identify as a counterfeiting Muslim as the Messiah. We'll leave that to God. Daniel says the imposter shall not regard the desire of women, that the counterfeit Messiah is a man. It would also seem clear that this man is either homosexual, transsexual, or simply has no active desire for a relationship with the opposite sex. That means he could be a celibate priest or a pope under vow. So, again, Daniel reveals so much about this imposter. Daniel describes this imposter as a vile person. The word vile is a horrific characterization, I think, implying moral debasement, just pure wickedness. Despicable. Well, I guess that would be a good description of a person, the veritable incarnation of Satan himself, wouldn't it? That he would wreak destruction and havoc on the earth. After appearing peaceable, he would work deceitfully and gradually stir up his power and courage against all the resisting powers, rising up even against the Holy Covenant in Israel. Be like Antiochus Epiphanes back there in history, around 165 BC, whose name actually meant God manifest, who in rage desecrated the Jewish temple. Remember that? He was only a type of the coming Antichrist or counterfeit Messiah. So this counterfeit figure devouring destruction will be unprecedented on the planet. Here's what Daniel said. At that time, there should be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. Wow. Jesus actually repeated that warning 2 days before his crucifixion. Did you know that? So we've got to continue. Daniel's unveiling drama. Where is it headed? Where are we today? Stay tuned.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Time is truly short, my friends. In Daniel's unveiling drama, the curtain has been pulled back, and we can begin to see this soon-to-appear counterfeit Christ figure, the imposter, to appear. But he won't initially be understood like that. He'll be received with joy. with clapping of hands, he will be deemed to be the world's greatest peacemaker. Remember, as Jesus was born there outside Bethlehem, the angel came to the shepherds and said, "Unto you is born this day a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. He'll be wrapped in, a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes." And then the angels sang, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." Isaiah, in Isaiah 9, 6, and 7, recorded the same situation, except in a much more explicit way. He said, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. And the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. On the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from this time even forevermore." So, he will be called the Prince of Peace. But it's interesting also that he shall be called the Mighty God. Now, I wonder why the Jewish rabbis throughout history to this very day, Orthodox Jews and so on, refuse to see that the Messiah prophesied by Isaiah was going to be called the Mighty God. Because the Jewish people do not believe that the Messiah will be divine. They believe that he'll be just a man like Moses. For in Deuteronomy, Moses said there would arise one like me who would speak to the people and they would listen to him. So they conclude that the Messiah would not be divine. So why do they ignore what the prophet Isaiah says, that his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father? The Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. They just ignore it, try to explain it away. But Isaiah was very clear about it, that not only would God reign, but this would be a representative of God, Messiah, who would rule and reign as the Prince of Peace, and would also be identified as divine, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father. So when Yeshua, Jesus, came, he said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father, because I and the Father are one." Wow. You see how the Bible really ties together? So Daniel then talks about this abomination of desolation. Jesus spoke of it in Matthew chapter 24 in his so-called Olivet Discourse 2 days before his crucifixion. He said that there would be an abomination of desolation as spoken of by the prophet Daniel stand in the holy place. The very same thing that Daniel spoke of, Jesus reiterated and said was going to happen. Then Jesus also said this, "Then shall be great tribulation, such as was not seen since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." This is the only place in the Bible that uses the word tribulation in this way. The only place. And it's called the Great Tribulation. Not just tribulation, but the Great Tribulation. So what is going to happen? Why is it that we keep talking about the tribulation? When people use the term the tribulation, they don't mean the Great Tribulation. When pastors use that, usually they don't mean the Great Tribulation. What do they mean? They mean a 7-year period that precedes the second coming of Christ. Well, why do they call all that the tribulation? Because there's no such thing stated in the Bible. Because they try to say, well, this is that, and this is like that, and therefore we conclude that this is the tribulation. So it's actually kind of constructed. So let's understand how that happened to be. In the book of Daniel, it talks about the 70th week of Daniel. We'll shorten the discussion for purposes of time, the 70th week of Daniel. So there are 69 weeks and then one, plus one, 70 weeks. And the 70th week of Daniel is the one that got separated off from the previous ones, yet to take place. Are we in that 70th week now? A period of 7 years? The word week usually in this kind of sense means 7 years. Well, the common way of looking at that is, yes, that's what it's talking about. Therefore, it is concluded by many pastors and theologians that we're going to call that the tribulation. 7 years. Now, from a practical standpoint, there may be a lot of truth in that. Not total truth, but a lot of truth. Because it will be a time of growing pressure. Growing pressure. Just like what happened to the French Revolution, which is a type of the coming tribulation. In the French Revolution, there were a few years that came as the rebellion against God moved forward and people's heads rolled as they got rid of spiritual authority, killing them and so on. But then after a period of time, with Robespierre believing that the pressure had not increased enough, and so they increased the pressure and the threat against the people and against all authority, including God's authority, and began to murder, behead many, many, many more people. And that became known as the Great Terror. Just like Jesus talked about the Great Tribulation. So what we really should be thinking about is the Great Tribulation, not just a period of trials and tribulations, because Jesus said, in the world you will have tribulation or testings and trials. So during that period of time, as pressures begin to build, are we experiencing them yet? I believe we are. At the very least, we're on the threshold of that time. So, that being the case, there would be about three and a half years of growing pressure until finally this Antichrist figure, the imposter, identity would be at least partially fulfilled by what appears to be the signing of a treaty. And in that signing of a covenant or a treaty, apparently with Israel and who knows with what else, it doesn't say, God views that as disclosed by the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 28 as a covenant with death. That will be a premier signal, plus the rebuilding of the temple. Those will be the clearest signals that we are now seriously on the edge of the Great Tribulation. When that happens, and this counterfeit Christ figure walks into the rebuilt temple and reveals that he truly is the imposter, that he truly is the satanic replacement, the incarnated Satan, so to speak. Jesus said to Israel, flee to the mountains. Get out of Jerusalem quickly, because all hell is going to break loose. He said it's going to be a time like there never has been before. It's called the time of Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah talked about that, the time of Jacob's trouble. Jesus talked about it. So now both Jew and Gentile right now are facing a moment of truth, both individually and collectively as families and as congregations, denominations, nations, and the time is very short, I believe. So our only hope now in our heartbroken is heartbroken repentance, followed by the Father's mercy. So it's not only Daniel, but the spirit of Elijah that now implores us to prepare the way of the Lord. See, Isaiah talked about that in Isaiah chapter 40. He said, the voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Even George Frederick Handel, in his preparing and introducing Messiah, that great oratorio, one of the great arias is, the voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. In other words, get your life in order. Don't expect the Messiah to come in and run over rocky areas and swamps in your life. Get ready. People, get ready. Jesus is coming. Soon we'll be coming home. And at that time, massive persecution is going to arise in a raging scourge of the imposter to destroy the mighty and the holy people, Daniel chapter 8. But the humbly repentant people who are walking in righteousness and holiness are the people that do know their God, as did Daniel, and they will be strong and do exploits, Daniel chapter 11. That's a wonderful thing. Are you that person? Are you strong? Will you be strong, or will you capitulate when the persecution becomes so great that you will be compelled to take the infamous mark of the beast, or you'll be unable to eat, you'll be unable to transact business, you'll be unable to do anything. So, we wrap up, even in the time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, the people, true and faithful believers in Messiah, Yeshua, both Jew and Gentile, shall be delivered, everyone that is found written in the book. When is your name going to be written in the book? When you finish the race, my friends. Not when you make a declaration. Not when you get in the starting blocks of life, but when you finish the race faithfully, as the Apostle Paul did, declaring, I have kept the faith, I've finished the course, therefore is laid up for me a crown of righteousness which the Lord has laid up for all those like me who have followed and been faithful. Daniel concludes by saying, in unveiling this drama, many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. But they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. And the drama is over while we await Messiah to finish the drama. Thanks for joining us here on Viewpoint, friends. Daniel's drama unveiled. We just did it in an overview in 55 minutes. Get a copy of my book, Messiah, Unveiling the Mystery of the Ages. $18 will put this $22 book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Also, in addition to that, consider Antichrist, a $22 book, yours for $20. You get both of them. It's $6 for one book for postage in hand and $2 for the additional one. Thanks for joining us. Become a partner, friends. Do it today. Don't delay. Jesus is coming soon.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.